Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, Neil Richmond, Minister of State for International Development and Diaspora and Fine Gael TD for Dublin Rathdown, is with me in the studio. Good morning to you. Firstly, we're sitting here after a weekend of tragedy. I mean, can we get your response firstly to the death of Garda Kevin Flatley, killed, who was carrying out his duties over the weekend?
No, this is an absolute tragedy. And I know not only for Garda Flatley's family, the community in Balbriggan, but the wider family of An Garda Síochána is really reeling from this. And the Chief Constable is right. This requires us in due course to have a bit of a better reflection as citizens in relation to road traffic safety. But I think for now, it's just, you know, two young daughters and a wife without their dad and their husband this morning. It's absolutely heartbreaking.
And we had the other tragedy as well, and we'll be talking about both in detail later in the programme. In County Donegal, the teenagers Matt Sabanda and Emmanuel Familola dying following that drowning tragedy in Lough Swilly. A really difficult time for the community in Inishowen too.
Very difficult for the community in Inishowen and also the wider community in the direct provision community. And I think that's important to say that. These are two young boys whose family came here for a better life. It's a reminder to us all, we're coming into summer. Water safety is paramount. But again, seeing their pictures in the news last night, full of life, coming to the end of their school days, the whole life ahead of them, and just two young lives cut short. It's absolutely awful.
It certainly is, and we add our condolences to everyone touched by the tragedies over the weekend. Now, Minister, we were talking just before the break about this news that the United States and China have agreed to fairly drastically roll back tariffs for this 90-day period. Do you think that this might embolden Donald Trump when it comes to dealing with the European Union, or will it have the opposite effect?
I think the opposite. And what I think we're seeing over the last number of weeks is a little bit of a levelling of the American approach to the world in terms of tariffs and trade and in terms of conflicts, be they in Ukraine or the Middle East. And we see that from the comments, not just from the president himself and particularly the vice president last week, but we've also seen the pause in terms of tariffs with the EU. Now a very welcome pause with China, because this, the particular US-Chinese tit-for-tat was escalating rapidly. And that sort of a trade war would have been really, really damaging, not just for people in America or China, but in Ireland and across the EU too. Tariffs are bad. Mm-hmm. Trade wars are bad. Sure, there's small chinks of light where people might do well out of it, but overall it's really bad for the global economy. And we've even seen it in the last couple of weeks in my own community, business who have held back their investment. Maybe we won't do that expansion just because things are so volatile. Businesses need stability. They certainly don't need a trade war. So I think this is really welcome, and it will be good for EU-US negotiations that are ongoing as well.
Well, we're looking for zero for zero, as I was talking to Richard Curran about. Now, this deal for 90 days with China, there are still tariffs in place. Like, it's unlikely that we will get to that zero for zero stage.
Well, there is a potential between the EU and the US for zero for zero, because if you look at the cumulative tariffs that were there before Donald Trump came in, none of them were really more than 1%, 2%, and very niche industries. The relationship between the US and China is different. They compete on a different scale for different markets and different areas. Europe is well up for zero zero. We're up for buying more things from the US, to be quite bluntly, and cooperating more to ensure freer, fairer trade and mutual growth. You do that with the lowest possible tariffs that are available, and equally with detailed discussion and negotiation, with Commissioner Stefkovic leading the way on that.
Richard Curran makes the point, and he was writing about this at the weekend, that this, what the knock, I suppose, that the economy has had both here and in the wider EU is really what we needed, because we were in danger of overheating. And he has done the hard work for us because the government either didn't want to face it or couldn't.
Yeah, and that's a very theoretical argument, and economists will put that across. But I think it's really important to set out what the growth rate has been and what it would likely to be. So sure, coming out of COVID, we had way too high growth rate, hitting 9, 10%, not sustainable, but it was coming out of the pandemic. We were starting to level off closer to that 2.5, 3%. And that's where you want your economy constantly to be growing, 2.5 to 3.5%. That's good, sustainable growth that allows you keep up. We weren't flying away. Sure, we'd record tax receipts, but that was being put aside. It wasn't fueling. I think going down to a 1-1.5% growth rate would slow down the economy. But we have to remember, and particularly as public representatives, that means less jobs being created, less opportunities for people leaving university, less opportunities for people to expand their businesses, to invest, less money in people's pockets. Rather, if we can get a sensible agreement on tariffs, if we can get a de-escalation overall in relation to trade wars, we can go back to that sustainable growth that Ireland has been enjoying compared to other EU member states. Spain hasn't, they're much faster. Germany are in danger of going into recessions. And if the EU's largest member state economy goes into recession, that's going to hit us very hard
too.
We're not
talking about, you know, inviting recession here, but we're talking about a situation where our infrastructure and our housing situation just can't cope with the level of growth that we're at. So if there is a pullback, that is helpful in a way to you in government?
I dispute that, because if we were going at a rapid growth rate of 9-10% like we were after the pandemic, that is unsustainable. Our growth rate had stabilised over the last year or two. It is in a sustainable way. And if we look at where we've been able to take the windfall corporation tax, where we've been able to put them into funds to prepare for the future, and also if you look at the amount of money that is being spent on infrastructure now by Jack Chambers, previously by Pascal Donoghue, that is the work that has been going on. And I can't go through a town or a village in Ireland where we don't see works on road upgrades, where we don't see works on public transport, where we don't see works on schools, hospitals and everything else.
Yeah, there were reports over the weekend that ministers are being told to cut their cloth now, that there may not be the level of spending that was expected given what's happening on the international stage.
Well, that has been the sort of mantra for the last couple of weeks and months since President Trump announced the start of these tariffs. Everyone has said, quite reasonably, because this is a government of prudence, we're talking about Pascal Donoghue here, who's looking after the tiller, and he's rightly telling all ministers that the world is facing a geopolitical flux at the moment, economically. So anyone coming to him or Jack Chambers with massive spending plans really needs to reassess. Because things are going well at the moment, we're saving money economically to provide for our society, but it would be irresponsible for us if we weren't live to the possible threats that mm-hmm. are there globally.
Now, you're just back from Ukraine, where you were towards the end of the week. You were part of talks to establish this special tribunal for the crime of aggression against Ukraine. Now, this will have the power to investigate, prosecute, try Russian political and military leaders. But given that we're talking about peace talks potentially happening this week, between the leaders of Ukraine and Russia, is now the time for tough talk?
Well, this isn't about tough talk. This was a legal instrument that has been in the ether for about 18 months now. Again, it was discussed last week in Ukraine and will now go to the Council of Europe, which is obviously the body that's parallel to the EU, much bigger members, for ratification, because it is really important. When we talk about Russia's brutal war in Ukraine, yes, we want it to end. We want it to end it on terms that benefit Ukraine, but there needs to be punishment. There needs to be a response that you can't do this. Vladimir Putin can't launch an illegal war, and a war where there's been documented incidents of war crimes. And I spent last Thursday and Friday walking around Lviv in Ukraine, where you can see the impact of that war. You can see buildings that have been destroyed. I was in a graveyard that is full, and not one person buried there died before 2023. I was in a hospital where I met 117 people who have just had amputations and have been fit with prosthetics. Vast majority of them aren't military people. These were individual civilians going about their daily lives mm-hmm. and now they've no arm or they've no legs.
So just going back to the talks that may happen this week, I see Kaya Kallas in the last few minutes. She's in London. This is the EU's top diplomat. She says that there has to be a ceasefire before those peace talks happen. Is that the EU position?
Absolutely. And there has to be a real ceasefire, because Vladimir Putin in his information war is very good at claiming ceasefires, like we've seen over the last weekend marking VE Day. But the last time there was a substantial ceasefire, there were over 2,000 drones and missiles sent from Russia into Ukraine. You need to be able to give the people of Ukraine a break. They need a chance to see what peace would look like in order to allow real discussions and real negotiations happen. President Zelensky has said he's more than happy to man up and attend those talks. Well, the Russians have to make sure that they recognise that a ceasefire really is a ceasefire, just like peace really has to be peace.
Mm-hmm. You just wonder, is there time now for that to happen in advance of Thursday, bearing in mind as well that the location in Istanbul, that was suggested by Vladimir Putin. So the expectation would be, would it not, that he would want to attend those talks?
Absolutely. And Istanbul has been a regular location for talks through this conflict, not full peace talks, but there has been talks between the foreign ministers there in Istanbul. I think absolutely, of course, there's time to do this. A ceasefire can be called in the next 5 minutes. All it needs is Vladimir Putin to tell his generals to stop bombarding Ukraine for a 30-day period. Talk start, and we actually can move on, because this conflict, Claire, and this is something that we can't lose sight of, the longer this conflict continues, the more this impacts our lives here in Ireland.
But you've got to wonder how any ceasefire would be policed, because it would seem that the UK and the EU together don't have the resources. They haven't been able to work out how they would do that and without the United States. The United States doesn't appear to want peacekeepers on the ground either. I mean, what would it look like?
Well, I think we're starting to see, a little bit of a shift in the American position. Speech by the American vice president last week in Munich very clearly changed the focus that Russia needs to stop this. And the Americans, despite everyone actually noticing, they actually sold the Ukrainians €50 billion worth of armaments last week. Now, they didn't give them, they sold them. But that's something that hadn't been done previously under a Trump presidency. What we have seen over the weekend in London and beyond and in Paris and in Kyiv has been really welcome, where we see the leaders of France, of Germany, of Poland, of Spain, of the UK move toward, and the EU move towards, their coalition of the willing. They're a coalition of willing who are willing to protect the peace in Ukraine in order to stop, one, the slaughter in that country, but also to stop the impacts that are really hurting people in Ireland and the UK as well.
Is the big fear from the EU side that Putin offers a choice between the annexation of eastern Ukraine and an ongoing and terrible war which Ukraine can't win?
Well, I don't know if Russia can win it either. We get unsubstantiated reports of casualties, and Russia has taken a lot more casualties than Ukraine has, despite being the aggressor. And we see that's why they've drafted in soldiers from North Korea and Eritrea and Syria and other countries previously. What the EU really wants is this conflict to end on terms that protect the sovereignty of Ukraine, that can ensure that the Ukraine joins the European Union, by the way, by 2031, and that every other country in Europe can realise that they're not under threat. Because I was sitting beside the Lithuanian foreign minister and the Latvian foreign minister. They're spending 5% of their GDP in defence. They have their children in their schools doing emergency drills for when bombs fall in their cities. We have the luxury of being 3.5 hours of a flight away from Ukraine, but our European colleagues, who are our allies and who we do have legal obligations to, are petrified that if Russia is allowed stop this war on terms that are so beneficial to them, and Ukraine's a very wealthy country in terms of minerals, that if it stops on those terms, that it could be the Baltic states or Poland in 5 or 10 years just as easily.
Yeah, and that is a fear that has been expressed since 2022, isn't it? Turning to the Middle East now, Hamas saying that it will release the last living American hostage in a bid to stop Israeli operations and open a safe humanitarian corridor. But Israel is saying that there will be no ceasefire. Where do things stand from your point of view, and can any further pressure be brought to bear on Israel?
No, absolutely, further pressure can, and I think now will, be brought to bear by countries who perhaps haven't been as vocal or strong as the likes of ourselves or Slovenia and Spain. And very interesting remarks at our European Council meeting on Wednesday night from the German and Austrian foreign ministers, two new foreign ministers, two new governments who previously said, yes, we are friends of Israel, but now they're saying we're friends of Israel, but this Israeli government doesn't act in our name, and that any escalation of the conflict, any ongoing levels of sheer horror that we're seeing, and the lack of the opening of a humanitarian corridor won't be acceptable.
Yes. So one thing you could do is pass the Occupied Territories Bill. Roderick O'Gorman, your former coalition colleague, questions why this issue has been raised around services. So before the election, you said that you would pass the bill. Now you're saying, oh, there might be an issue here between goods and services. We need to look at it a little more. Where was that raised, and why? And if it was the Attorney General, can we see what is being said?
Well, I think it's really clear, just to clarify what exactly we said before the election, because broad strokes, people are saying you'd do X, Y or Z. What the now Taoiseach has said very clearly throughout the campaign is we agreed with what the Occupied Territories Bill is trying to do, but we will not pass something that doesn't stand up to the legal test. So last July, following the ICJ judgment, the then Taoiseach asked for the Attorney General to look at it. After September, he provided the advice that there's a way to do something in the spirit of this bill, either through heavily amending it or producing new legislation. After the Taoiseach's meeting with Senator Black last week, who is the initiator of this bill going back to 2018, he believes that we're now in a position to present pre-legislative scrutiny on goods by the summer recess, because this is something that can actually be quantified done. In terms of legal advice, as Roderick would know, he sat in Cabinet. I haven't sat in Cabinet. Legal advice is consigned for lots of reasons to Cabinet ministers themselves. And he would have known from his time in Cabinet what the very clear obstacles are to the version of this bill, but what can be done. We have been working being very open with constructive members of the opposition, like Senator Bach, like the Labour Party, indeed, like Roderick and Paul Gogarty and others, to get something onto the floor of the Dáil that's realistic. Passing the Occupied Territories Bill will be a good statement. Our Slovenian friends are looking to follow our example. The French have referenced something. But we have to make sure that we pass something that stands up because we believe in the rule of law and international law.
But can it be done before the summer recess?
Well, as what the Taoiseach said on another forum is that he hopes to get the bill to pre-legislative scrutiny of the committee by the summer recess. I think we're in that place. I think that's very possible to do. There are some people out there who seem to think that this is a matter of switching a button and we'll pass a version of this bill and the conflict will stop. Let's be quite clear.
They suspect that you're delaying it, that you don't want to do it. That's what they suspect.
Oh, we very much want to do it. But Claire, we don't believe in doing things for the sake of it. We believe in passing legislation, one, that stands up to international law, two, that will have an impact. Because any version of the Occupied Territories Bill, quite frankly, probably isn't for stopping the conflict today or reopening a humanitarian conflict today. Rather, it's been making sure that going forward in the medium term that one, we don't take goods from the occupied territories and two, we're able to move into a position that the French have suggested where we can have sanctions against those settlers in the occupied territories too.
All right, we'll leave it there. Minister, thank you for coming in. Minister of State Neil Richmond. Now, coming up next, should big tourist towns be exempt from government plans to clamp down on short-term lets? We debate after this.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.